Hello. It's wonderful to see you folks here this evening. You've tuned in to Heart of Freedom Meditation. I'm Doug Pullen, and it's a pleasure to see you. We'll just be getting started with some meditation. So as you're ready to, just let yourself begin to get settled in, get comfy, and we can let ourselves kind of explore what's most alive here in the present moment. And if you'd like to let your eyes close or just be softly downcast, bring the focus into the body. And to make an intentional and deliberate kind of shift from being external, concerned with things of the world, to being more kind of curious about the internal world. Yeah, what's here? Yeah. And that can be, relinquishing any kind of mental preoccupations, agendas, planning, that kind of thing. Just letting that go into the mental, emotional parking lot. Maybe notice contact with the chair, floor, hands touching. Pressure, warmth, coolness, tingling. And if it seems helpful to take a long, slow, deep breath, maybe to do that as a way to kind of deepen and allow some relaxation. Contact with the internal world can include, noticing places where there might be tightness or holding or tension, and see if we can let things soften. So region of the face, region around the forehead, the eyes, neck, shoulders. And including the chest, diaphragm, belly. Just letting things soften. Just letting the breath invite some softening. If there's any tension or tightness. And here's an invitation to remember and reflect on, where is it that we can find true refuge in this challenging experience of being human? And just an invitation to reflect on and consider this capacity to be aware, to be awake, as a place for refuge. Taking refuge in our true nature, our Buddha nature, that's awake and kind, compassionate. Take refuge in what we can actually discover here in the present moment through our own investigation, curiosity, taking refuge in the Dharma, and to take refuge in our sense of being a part of something bigger that supports us, a community of awakening, the lineage of Sangha that goes back many generations to the time of the Buddha. How we practice today and support each other in our practice, taking refuge in Sangha. And we can discover refuge, presence, through taking a primary focal point or object of sensation like the breath. So discovering for yourself in this moment, how is it that the breath reveals itself? Where is it that we experience sensations that let us know that we're breathing? In our meditation this evening, I'm going to invite us just with a gentle invitation to consider the four elements that are found in mindfulness of the body. And if staying with the breath and coming back to the breath is what works best for you this evening, to stay grounded and centered and relaxed, by all means, do that practice. And if you're feeling a little bit more adventurous, you can consider expanding a little bit. And so I'll just offer some suggestions. So in starting with where we are, if we're focusing on the breath, we can recognize the sensations of breathing that connect us to something that's bigger. This quality of that's found in nature, the air element. And it's a combination of various gases, oxygen, which nurtures the body, which comes from plant life, and then our lungs release carbon dioxide. And so with the sensation of breathing, we could have a sense of our interconnectedness with life. It's just very simple. The nurturing oxygen comes in, supports the every cell in our body, and then what we don't need is released. So it's very simple, but we can attend to it. We can be present with this process that both is very intimate and immediate, and also connects us with life on the planet. Just as this body breathes, so all living beings with lungs breathe. This is what it feels like. And the breath as a mindfulness object is always here for us to come back to. It feels like this. The breath breathes itself. And the second of the four great universal elements is the element of water or liquid. And it's the fluid aspect of our lived experience. And we might notice it as saliva in our mouths. We can make that a mindfulness object for a moment. Or perhaps there's the sense of blood flowing, heart beating, pumping blood. A large percentage of this body is made up of water, and the relative solidity or salinity of the body is pretty close to what the ocean's salinity is. It's almost like we're a piece of the ocean that's walking around on the planet with all of this liquid. And So we enter our with water, having a sense of that liquid quality, the flowing quality of consciousness that's ever flowing and changing. And just a reminder, there's always the breath to come back to. If you find yourself kind of getting lost or pulled off into thinking or commentary or judgment, you can just notice, oh, there's a breath, or, oh, there's this flowing quality of change that's happening. Yeah, and just a reminder to be accepting and kind with whatever comes up as a most predominant experience. Yeah, letting go of judging or commentary, trying to fix us through meditation, just letting things be. This breath, these body sensations. Yeah, and the third of the great elements that connect us to life on the planet is the what's referred to as the fire element. And we can directly experience that in the body as the relative warmth or coolness. Sometimes it's more noticeable points of contact where if hands are touching, we can feel the warmth of that touch, that contact. Or maybe there's a part of the body that's noticing more a cool quality. You can notice the relative warmth or coolness of the breath as it enters the body and as it leaves. And please remember that we're not trying to have an experience. We're just trying to notice what experience is already here. It could be really pronounced or it could be quite subtle. So just letting it be like this, whatever's happening. and the fourth of the great universal elements that we can notice in embodied practice is the earth element. And maybe the easiest way to notice that is to connect with our sit bones as bony parts that support the body when we sit. We can feel the support that comes from the chair or the cushion, ultimately supported by the earth itself. And when we sit with mindful awareness and present with body sensations, we take the one seat, we take the seat of our own awakening right here, this piece of the living earth. There might be other aspects of your present moment experience that reflect that, the sense of the volume of the body, its relative solidity, bony structures like the teeth, or the bones in the fingers and the feet. And just a reminder, as we bring mindfulness to these aspects of our physical experience, it's just the same as being mindful of the breath, in the sense that we're noticing if we start to get pulled into identification with thinking, commentary, judgments, trying to make meaning, and come back to the simplicity of the embodied experience in this moment, whether it be the breath itself, or the water, liquid aspect of our experience, or the fire, the relative heat or coolness, or this earth aspect. Different ways of being present within this body that also help us recognize this body is part of something that's bigger. just gently and clearly present with this moment, this breath, this piece of the living earth that wakes up to itself. So, yeah, continuing to take good care of our present moment experience and stay embodied with our awareness. So if there's a need or a desire to shift or stretch or move a little bit, yeah, we can do so with mindful presence. Yeah. Sometimes it's helpful, even outside of formal meditation, to just have a sense of kind of what our primary focal point will be. And that can change, of course, if the body is moving. It might be what the most predominant sensation is with movement itself. And that could be flowing and different from one moment to the next. That there also might be a kind of background awareness that there is a body that's sitting, and just to know, you know, there's this body that sits, there's that connection with the earth that helps us not get pulled off into discursive thinking. Yeah, so we can stay more present with observations of what's germane, what's relevant here. So I'd like to share a couple of things briefly, just to mention that I posted in the chat once again our virtual Dana Bowl there. So if you feel so moved, if it brings you joy or pleasure to support these teachings, there's a place to do that in a financial way. You can also do volunteer work in various forms at the center, or yeah, just whatever feels good. So there's that. Also, want to just briefly mention a few things that are coming up here at PIMC. Coming up this weekend from 10 to 4, Saturday the 27th, Mary Stonecabbage is going to be here teaching a retreat called Developing a Deep Intimacy with Our Experience. So, yeah, there's an opportunity for some deeper practice. And then coming up on May 4th, which is the following Saturday, Robert B. and Betsy Toll are teaching from 9 to 4:30, Courage and Compassion in Troubled Times. So that's a day-long workshop coming up. And then, let's see, I think that's it as far as in the near future events happening. So also just to mention, I am just about at the point where I'm ready to announce a return to hybrid offerings for Heart of Freedom. As you can see, I'm at the center this evening. I've been working out the kinks in the technology end of things the last few weeks. So, I think in the next week I'll have an announcement about when I'll be available here if you want to come in person, as well as I'll continue to do the Zoom offering. So be looking for that. I'll make an announcement in the digest, and then I'll probably, actually, if you're on my email list, I'll probably announce it there first. So you'll get first kind of knowledge about that. So I'd like to give us a chance to do the practice of mindful speaking and listening, and in the sharing circle. I think all of you here this evening have done it many times before, so I probably don't need to repeat the kind of guidelines or instruction. So I'll get us started. My name is Doug, and we're just experiencing the pleasure and joy that comes from practicing Dharma. I've been teaching since 6 p.m. this evening, teaching the basics class, and yeah, there's just a kind of a peace and tranquility and equanimity that's really kind of pleasant, that isn't really based on anything other than just doing this practice. So that's it for me. I've spoken. Thank you.
And I'm very grateful to be here. I was reading a bit about Henry David Thoreau's Walden before I got here, so that seems to be sort of intertwined with a lot of the meditation, and sometimes there seems like an overlap a little bit with his work and the Buddha's in a way. Anyways, this thought. Anyways, I've spoken.
Thanks, Michelle. Just a gentle nudge, check in. Anybody kind of just on the edge of wanting to share something? Well, I'll share a Dharma talk, Dharma reflection. So this week we have the Earth Day celebration or recognition. So wanted to offer reflection on that. And just a reminder that to the degree that a Dharma talk is reflecting the truth of our universal experience, it's always just a reminder of what we already know. Anything that sounds a bit off or like, where did he come up with that? Probably is just a reflection of my ignorance or my lack of clarity. So, to the degree that it reminds you of what you already know, and maybe an opportunity to take it deeper, then that's the intention. So, there's that. And it's an opportunity to ask questions that we may not have asked, and of ourselves, really. And there may not be answers that come from the intellect or the ego, but more come from direct lived experience. So this evening, I pose a question, really, for us to consider, and probably many of you have thought about this before and heard me give Dharma talks on it before, but we can always take it deeper. What meaning or significance might there be for us in our own practice, in our own lives, from the mythological story of Siddhartha Gautama, the Buddha to be, that was his name before he was the Buddha, touching the earth. Touch the earth before full awakening. To the degree that that seems like a significant or helpful question, how can we touch the earth in our own way? Feel our connection, feel our sense of belonging, that we belong here, we belong to each other, we belong to this planet. Last week, I think I shared a quote from Alan Watts, where he was talking about this quality of interdependence and interconnectedness. And he said, the earth peoples in the same way an apple tree apples. Yeah, we're just part of the tree of life. So when I feel a sense of separation and isolation from the whole, is it possible for me to reconnect, to re-root, through meditation, through the wordless language of feeling, into something where there's no separation, where there's this sense of, yeah, of course. Here's a poem from Mary Oliver. When I am among trees, especially the willows, and the honey locusts, equally the beech, the oaks, and the pines, they give off such hints of gladness. I would almost say they save me, and daily. I am so distant from the hope of myself, in which I have goodness and discernment, and never hurry through the world, but walk slowly and bow often. Around me the trees stir in their leaves and call out, "Stay a while." The light flows from their branches. And they call again. It's simple. They say, "And you too have come into the world to do this, to go easy, to be filled with light and to shine." We're all here to shine. Touching the earth. So the invitation is to discover what connects us. The Buddha said, so discover for yourself the interconnected nature of life. Our tendency is to feel isolated and separate. And that actually defies the direct experience of reality, but we so easily get disconnected from that. And then it's easy to turn on each other instead of remembering that our existence as human beings depends on earth and air and water and warmth, the warmth of the sun. And all life depends on these things. And it's so fragile. It's so easily disturbed. And just as our existence depends on and is conditioned by these things, so there are also everything else is conditioned by our existence and affected by it. Buddhadasa Bhikkhu, who's a Thai meditation master, said something quite profound and beautiful and true. The entire cosmos is a cooperative. The sun, the moon, the stars live together as a cooperative. And the same is true for humans and animals and trees and the earth. When we realize that the world is a mutual, interdependent, and cooperative enterprise, then we can build a noble environment, noble society. And if our lives aren't based on this truth, then we shall perish. It's that simple. So unless we're careful to be kind of selective and titrate our exposure, we can easily be bombarded these days with difficult news, upsetting news about all kinds of things. And important to be informed, of course, so that we know what's going on and can take action where it's possible to do so. Whether it's about climate change or war or famine, disease, racism, sexism, homophobia, all of those things, there can easily and understandably be really strong reactions to all of those things. And we can lose, if we get carried away in our reactivity, our connection to our groundedness in the earth and what brings us together, the common ground. So this evening I want to share with you one of the ways that I work with that. I mean, the entirety of the practice is really, for me, an essential kind of refuge for how to be in the world, particularly in troubling times like we live in. But as I seek to find balance in my life and to bring it into the world, I'm inspired by the simple image of the Buddha under the Bodhi tree. According to the mythology, which is symbolic and important because it reflects truth, was challenged by the personification of greed, hatred, and ignorance in the form of Mara, this entity that's really a mind projection. And Mara claimed his spiritual accomplishments were greater than the Buddha's, and that he, not the Buddha, was the one who was supposed to be under the Bodhi tree. And Mara's fierce monsters roared to scare the Buddha off. But the Buddha wasn't afraid. He stayed grounded, centered. He held up a single flower and silenced the monsters. Then once again they roared, this time saying that it was Mara's right to sit under the Bodhi tree. And Mara asked, so, Gautama, who will be your witness? And in reply, so the story goes, the Buddha gently reached down with his right hand and touched the earth. And in that moment, the earth shook, and there was a very strong voice that was heard saying, I am his witness. And Mara was defeated and slunk away. And then later that evening, the Buddha fully awoke, had the full awakening experience. He became the Buddha in that moment. And I'm particularly moved. I'm feeling that as I'm speaking now, that the Buddha turned to the Mother Earth to be his witness. He didn't turn to the gods or the heavens above. He touched the earth. That suggests that we can do that too. We can remember our connection. We can be grounded. Ungrounded, we can become lost in anger and in violence and in apathy and in withdrawal and in despair. But when we're grounded and connected to our true nature and the earth, we connect to the source of life within us and around us. And it's incredibly powerful. And important because we live with a lot of conditioning in our culture that distracts us from our true nature. We live in a mainstream culture that's highly materialistic and distracted, disconnected. Although mindfulness is kind of making its way into the nooks and crannies more and more. So change is happening. When facing the greatest challenge, the Buddha turned to the earth as his witness, and she stood by him. This shows up in other cultures. I know I've shared this with you folks in the past, but it's a powerful example, so I'd like to come back to it. In the native indigenous culture in Mexico, there was a teacher called Don Juan, who was discovered by Carlos Castaneda, who was an anthropologist. And Carlos became a student of his. And he asked him a question about how to find freedom from sadness, from sorrow. And here was Don Juan, the sorcerer's answer. Only if one loves this earth with unbending passion can one release one's sadness. A warrior is always joyful because his love is unalterable. And I'll just say here, the warrior here is a spiritual warrior. Battle really is about making peace with what's inside. It's not external. So his love is unalterable, and his beloved, the earth, bestows upon him inconceivable gifts. Sadness belongs only to those who hate the very thing that gives shelter to their being. This lovely being, which is alive to its last recesses and understands every feeling, soothed me, it cured me of my pains, and finally, when I had fully understood my love for it, it taught me freedom. And only love for this splendorous being, the earth, can give freedom to a warrior's spirit. So finding our way back home really is the invitation to remember that we belong. And we can discover that not through reading books or listening to Dharma talks. We can discover it through our own lived experience. In fact, that's the only place we really discover it. It's right here, this moment, these sensations. In my view, Gautamas, the Buddha to be's, kind of standing up to with peace Mara's sterile machismo, his violence, his, you could say, patriarchal control, makes a profound point that we belong to each other. And the man or woman or person who seeks enlightenment is in tune with the fundamental structure of the universe. And there isn't anything that's more powerful than that. It's the power that comes from being with, instead of the power that comes from being over, trying to control and dominate. It's the power of cooperation, of understanding that we enter our. Yeah. So, lots of different things I could share here just to remind us of this, to remind us of what we already know. But what it comes back to is, how can I bear witness to those forces of greed, hatred, and ignorance without identifying with them, the sources of suffering? Mara is a personification of those qualities. And the Buddha's answer was to connect with something bigger, to be the space of the spaciousness of the earth, to feel that support, that groundedness that then allows equanimity to not be caught up in and identified with whatever that might be that wants us to go to war or engage in things that aren't in harmony with life. And there's a kind of rudimentary conditioning, kind of, could say, the kind of immature ego aspect of us that tries to find security by using, fight, flight, freeze, faint conditioning, basic survival conditioning, when that isn't really appropriate or necessary. Today, most of the things that challenge us as a human society are best addressed through understanding this is a shared thing that we all need to cooperate around, whether it's global warming or making sure everybody has enough food to eat or there's weapons nearby and people aren't being bombed or killed or tortured. That all comes from understanding we're interconnected. When we really understand that, how could we possibly do these horrible things? It changes everything. But the immature ego, if you will, is ignorant of our interconnectedness and experiences itself as separate and as fixed and unchanging. And that just isn't the way things are, really. We talked last week about self as story. So according to the Buddha, according to Buddhism, this happens due to basic ignorance, experiencing ourselves as separate and fixed and unchanging. And this gives rise to greed for possessions. And people get a sense of security from getting more stuff. And it gives rise to hatred and violent rejection of anything that appears to threaten this illusory sense of separateness. So what's calling out for us is for us to remember to come back to and remember our true nature, to go to the root, really, of the problem that we've lost touch with the earth. We forgot where we came from and who we really are. Dharma in the Buddha's teaching doesn't think in terms of good and bad. It focuses on the ethics of intention. And in the terms good and bad are really alien to Buddhist ethical teaching. A skillful or ethical action is one that comes from a mind that's loving and generous and sees our connection, our interbeing. And an unethical action is one that comes out of a mind that's selfish and hateful and ignorant. And actions are understood to come in the form of thoughts and speech and body. We start to have, with mindfulness, we start to have the freedom to choose. What intentions do we want to act on? And, being grounded and connected to the earth and present makes it possible for us to have the freedom to choose to respond, instead of react out of greed, hatred, and ignorance. That's how we reduce suffering, both internally and externally. Yeah, that's what it comes down to. It ain't easy, though. Takes a lot of practice. Takes a lot of willingness to forgive and learn from our mistakes. Of course, we get pulled off track and pulled into, you know, the ignorance and the greed and the hatred and all of the mental conditioning. But then with mindfulness, we can learn from it instead of just habitually repeat it. We can learn, oh, that causes suffering. Maybe I don't want to keep doing that. Maybe I'd like to try something different. And to see the pattern that connects. Part of that, seeing that pattern that connects with the earth and connection back to Earth Day is the law of karma says every action has a result. And we're starting to see the results of our collective actions in terms of carbon dioxide buildup in the atmosphere and methane. And you know, we're doing something about it. And in order for our children and grandchildren and so on to have a habitable planet, we need to do a better job. But that change doesn't come through shaming and blaming and you know, negativity. It comes through a deeper understanding of course, I want to do everything to support life on the planet. Because that's what brings me joy. My joy is connected to your joy. My happiness and well-being is connected to yours, of course. I'm going to do everything I can to make the planet habitable and safe and welcoming. Because basically there's no separation at some fundamental level. We're all just parts of this living earth. We're all connected. So there's that. I'd like to do another guided meditation, but there's one other thing I just realized I want to remember to share with you. There's an essay that was written by a Buddhist scholar and activist. Their name is Predu Payatu, last name is Payutto, and it's called Buddhist Solutions for the 21st Century. And in it, he states the modern human civilization is in the grip of three harmful tendencies or tenaciously held views. These are the perception that humankind is separate from nature and that humankind must control, conquer, or manipulate nature according to our desires. The second is the perception that our fellow human beings are not fellow human beings. Rather, they're perceived the common situations or experiences shared among all people. Human beings have a tendency to focus on the differences, so instead of what connects us. And then the third thing is the perception that happiness is dependent on an abundance of material possessions. The first perception is an attitude towards nature. The second is a perception is an attitude towards fellow human beings. And the third is an understanding of the objectification of life. Practice is really to uproot those delusions, those illusions. He goes on to say that for human beings to live happily, there must be freedom on three levels: physical freedom, social freedom, and inner freedom. Inner freedom is the ability to live happily and contentedly within ourselves without needing to manipulate or exploit the world around us. Without inner freedom, human happiness is totally dependent on the manipulation of the external environment and social exploitation. So this inner freedom is freedom from neurotic craving, freedom from hatred, and freedom from spiritual ignorance, which is essential to the ecology of our planet. Without this inner freedom, we're at the mercy of the forces which push us into overconsumption, violent competition, and a search for happiness and security where happiness and security can't be found in material consumption. So, and these are some of the implications of the first principle of Buddhism, which is nonviolence. So I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I thought it was pretty poignant and powerful. So let's circle back and do a little bit more practice together before we finish this evening. So just return, or maybe just deepen into the awareness of the breath, maybe connecting to the earth through points of contact, taking our one seat, or deepening into our one seat. We metaphorically sit under our own Bodhi tree here. And just riding the waves of the breath, moment to moment. The focus of this short meditation is really just essentially, you belong here. We all belong here. And to notice what comes up. How can we deepen into welcoming ourselves and all beings into a place, a community of belonging, of mutual recognition, respect. When you feel comfortable resting with the flow of your breathing, when that's ease, when there's a sense of ease there, relative ease, picture someone in your life who you know really loves you. Just unconditional. And notice how that feels. The sense of I am totally accepted. And just giving yourself over to the feeling qualities of this quality, this selfless love, this kindness that they accord you. Or it could be someone from the past who's no longer here, so maybe remembering what that was like when they were still here, when they were alive. And just feeling that whole aura or field of their love for you. And right here, right now, just breathing with these feelings, noticing how you can maybe allow yourself to just be bathed in them, just resting in the warmth and the radiance of their heartfelt embracing of you, just as you are. You're totally welcome. You belong here. Without having to be different, without having to be worthy, without having to be particularly deserving of anything, just because you are this precious life, you belong. And in fact, you may not feel particularly worthy or deserving. That doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. The fact is that you were or are loved. Their love is for you, just as you are, for who you are now, already, and who you've always been. And yeah, just allowing your heart to bask in these feelings, to be cradled in them. You're a part of this precious living earth. And to be rocked moment by moment by the swinging rhythmic beating of your own loving heart or the loving heart of another. And yeah, to notice how with the breath you can really allow things to soften, just allow it to be, yeah, experienced, maybe feeling the fire aspect, the warmth, or the pulsing that might be the water aspect of things. And here's an invitation, and only when it feels right to you, if it does, and it's totally fine if it doesn't, whenever you feel ready, see if you can become the source as well as the object of these same feelings of love, offering them to yourself or to another. Or both. In other words, take these feelings of friendliness, of love, of belonging for yourself as if they were your own rather than those of another. And cradling in your own heart these feelings of love and acceptance. And remembering that we can always touch the earth. We belong here. Yeah, you belong. And resting in this field of loving kindness to whatever degree you can experience it. You might find it useful to whisper these phrases, or yeah, just whisper them softly to yourself, like they're being whispered to you by the wind, by the air, by the earth herself. May I be safe and protected and free from inner and outer harm. Yeah. Or may I be happy and contented. May I remember my true nature. May I experience ease and well-being. Yeah. And just noticing what it's like to offer this love, this unconditional acceptance and wishes of well-being. Maybe one particular phrase is useful to stay with, just simply, yeah, may I be safe, may I be protected from inner and outer harm. Notice how it feels in the body. And in just a few moments, we're going to be transitioning and we'll be checking in once again. But taking this practice with us to whatever degree is helpful, letting it be a reminder of our true nature. Just to pause here for a few minutes to once again check in, see if there's any sharing, questions. Yes, Claire.
Thank you. That was really a wonderful reminder, and as I was listening to the Dharma talk and doing this last meditation, I got fixated on a gardening issue I'm having. I've been an organic gardener for decades, and last year a few snails showed up, and it was manageable. I just sort of tossed them somewhere else. And this year, many, many came. I can't kill them. My partner can. And I really tried to get on their level and get into the frequency of snail world. And I talked to some people. And a friend said, why don't you put them in the green bin, the recycling bin? And I thought, oh. So I started to put them in, and I'd throw scraps and food. And I didn't quite feel right doing that. So they took them to a corner of my yard, far away. And my partner, that was not acceptable. These things are going to take over. Then they disappeared. They're gone. And I found one the other day. And in fact, I was disappointed because I was doing sort of a snail patrol in the morning, and I was disappointed when I didn't find any. And I thought, wow, this is something, because they weren't a pest to me anymore. And I found one yesterday, and I cradled it, and I put it in the green bin, and it doesn't feel right. So I'm looking for some guidance around this, being in the earth, being a part of the earth, and really feeling connected over the years of gardening, and then coming, and I don't have pests. The way that we garden, we just really don't have very many. So this has been eye-opening, and this Dharma talk is helpful. And I don't have any answers, but I'm looking for some insight with my friends that are also part of the earth, but they eat the things that I don't want them to eat.
So this might be helpful to say. The Buddha said karma is intention. So notice what your intention is in relationship. And I think you're already doing that. You're trying to be attentive to intention. So what is the attitude if the mind is has an attitude of ill will or hatred, then that has karmic consequences to it, leads to karmic results, or vipaka would be the word, actually. So it's an opportunity to notice that. I mean, you're trying to work with them in some way, mm-hmm. be collaborative or cooperative. If something doesn't feel right, maybe to pause and be curious about that. What is that? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, I don't know where to put them, but thank you. I put them in the green van, I doubt they can survive the process.
Yeah, and maybe there's some other place they can go. I don't know realistically, but is there someplace else in nature where they could find food that wouldn't be taking away your food that you're growing in your garden?
Well, I have a confession. I would toss them into my neighbor's yard. They didn't garden. They had a dog run. This year they're gardening, so I don't do that. But I thought, well, they're fine over there. So anyway, okay, thank you. I appreciate it. That's very helpful. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about a park? I live near one. It's, yes, I've thought of that. And how far am I taking this?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. it becomes a big conversation, but I appreciate the suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's on a continuum. We do the best we can with trying to follow our ethics and values, and we try it and we see how it feels and how it goes, and then we go from there and maybe we try something different. So.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've had not the same, but a similar experience with squirrels. Getting into our mason bee little tubes, and we're able to do some chicken wire screen around the mason bees so that they aren't disturbed by the squirrel breaking in. But those squirrels are very crafty and sneaky. So, yeah. Trying to notice the intentions, like, okay, there's plenty of other food for the squirrel. We'd love you to eat the scraps from the bird feeder that fall on the patio. Go for that stuff. No. There's plenty there. So the squirrel looks pretty plump, so I don't think it's going to starve. Yeah. Anyway, I know it's just about time for us to wrap up, folks. Anybody last short sharing before we close? Okay. Well, let's do a closing metta. We can kind of just ride the momentum of our practice, and just hold a wish for our community, a loving wish, a gesture of kindness, a wish of well-being, and let it radiate throughout our community that's gathered here this evening, and then letting it radiate out into the world. May all beings remember our true nature, that we're all connected, that we're a part of this earth. Touch the earth and maybe find peace and freedom. And you're welcome to join me in chanting, "May all beings be happy," 3 times, and "Sadhu" 3 times, and unmute if you wish. May all beings be happy. Thank you. Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Be with you all. And yeah, take what's beneficial and continue to practice. And anything that's not, just let it go. And hope to see you again next week. And in the meantime, yeah, enjoy life. And yeah, take good care. Love you.
Thanks, love you, John. Bye. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you.